You're listening to Canada Reimagined. I'm Patrick Esmond White. This episode, The Poverty Trap. Let's discuss the curse of poverty, a multi-generational trap that's so hard to escape. We need a way out. It's obscene that a rich country like Canada can even allow hunger and homelessness. So my first question, what's the cause of poverty? The answer is deceptively simple. The poor have no money. Well, duh. We might then ask, could we not eliminate poverty by simply giving money to the poor? This solution has actually been proposed, and not just by Christian theologians or communist theoreticians. It's ironically similar to social credit, which a century ago was the very foundation of conservative populism, before they went Beverly Hillbilly on us and discovered oil. Regardless, various proposals have been made for a guaranteed basic income, a GBI, but the idea has just never taken off. A half a century ago, the Canadian Senate issued a report on poverty that called for a guaranteed income for everybody. They argued that a guaranteed basic income, also sometimes called a guaranteed livable income, would instantly address inequality and stimulate the economy. It would boost the income of the working poor, those with part-time, low-wage jobs in the gig economy. They'd then be able to support their families and stabilize the economy. Recently, a number of church leaders urged the Prime Minister to adopt a GBI as both a fiscal and a moral imperative. So, it's not exactly a secret plan. Still, it's too radical for the Liberals. The NDP supports a GBI, but when they negotiated to prop up the current government, they accepted dental care for the poor as a compromise. A single, simple national system to provide a basic income could replace most of the flawed patchwork of existing programs that help the poor. A GBI would be super easy to administer, much more efficient. Of course, it's another area where the Constitution and the responsibilities given to provinces just gets in the way of good, efficient government. So how much would it cost? The Parliamentary Budget Office at one point estimated it might cost $43 billion a year. However, it would be significantly less costly as a national rather than provincial program. That's about the cost of old age security. It's about a tenth of what all governments spend on social programs. By some estimates, it's about the same as what we lose every year from the higher costs caused by interprovincial trade restrictions. Is a GBI expensive? Well, yes, but not prohibitively so. In government lingo, it's results that matter. Does the end justify the cost? With a basic income, poor people can have a home, a phone, food. Canada could eliminate poverty, hunger, and homelessness. National health costs would drop. Petty crime would be somewhat reduced. A GBI can't promise utopia, but it can reduce inequality and slowly get people free of the poverty trap. The unemployed would have an incentive to work to improve their standard of living beyond the basics. Seasonal and gig workers would never starve. Farmers would have stability in a bad year. The poor would spend their income and boost the local economy. The demand for local goods and services would rise. Housing developers would have a reason to build affordable rental units. Sector by sector, the economy would benefit. Might it increase laziness? A Manitoba study showed that only two groups would work less with a GBI. Some youth would quit work to go back to school as a long-term investment. Some women would stay home to care for children. Neither of those is a bad thing. Might it enable drunks and drug addicts? The sad truth is, substance abuse is a reality, a disease, a public health concern. Ample research has shown that treating substance abuse as a health issue, not a criminal issue, can help deal with the social costs. A GBI may not solve the problem, but it would reduce the impact in a humane way. A few years back, the previous government in Ontario started a GBI pilot project. The Conservative Ford government instantly scrapped the pilot, so it's worthwhile looking at why some people oppose a GBI so vehemently. Many people fear that a GBI, like a hike in the minimum wage, will ultimately come from their pocket. They have tight finances. Every penny counts. Here's why they're wrong. A GBI would actually allow people to work at a minimum wage in order to do more than just scrape by. Neither the basic income nor minimum wage by themselves give people financial freedom. With both, they can enter the middle class. It then becomes a challenge for the low-wage workplace to treat people with respect and retain loyal employees. And by the way, yes, the tax system would claw back something. Let's be honest about what a minimum wage means. Can you imagine living on $30,000 a year, given the cost of rent, food, phones, and everything else? During COVID, we heard about personal support workers who had no choice but to sleep in homeless shelters while caring for the elderly in old age homes during the day. Many working poor have to do two or three jobs just to survive, especially if it's gig work with no benefits. Aside from the practical concerns of small business, the opposition to a GBI has always been fierce and philosophical. Some people see it as a moral issue captured by the Ben Franklin adage, "God helps those who help themselves." They think that if you simply give money to poor people, they'll have no incentive to improve their lot in life. They'll be lazy. Others see it as if their personal money is being stolen to give away. I pay taxes already. Why should I give my hard-earned money to a bunch of lazy bums? This might be reasonable if everybody started life with equal opportunity, with health, a happy home, food and clothing, decent schools, and so forth. But that's not reality. Most Canadians start life with no special privilege. They do work hard, and they do earn every penny, and that's how it should be. If a guaranteed basic income took this away, it would be terrible. But that's not what a GBI does. Consider those who start life dirt poor in a damaged and broken home. Hard work for them is not enough. A GBI helps these people have a fighting chance, and that's all. Sure, some people love to tell a good rags-to-riches story, and yes, they exist just as lottery winners can be found. More common is rags-to-rags. Anybody who has experienced poverty can tell you how hard it is to escape the trap. There's nothing noble about being hungry and homeless. Add in addiction and abuse, and the rags-to-riches story is a cruel hoax. Critics of a GBI say two other things. First, they extol the virtues of charity. Then they claim tax cuts will spur investment, creating great jobs for everybody, ending poverty. You know the line, a rising tide lifts all boats? Well, this approach has been tried for four decades. It was an economic experiment with roots in Reaganomics, so-called supply-side economics. The results are now evident. The rich got richer, the middle class and the working poor lost ground. The reality is, in Canada, we have not resolved the problem of poverty and inequality. We follow the American lead, but without the intentional cruelty. Our social programs just keep on keeping on, expecting new outcomes. It's insanity. So let's turn the argument around. How about we talk about ending poverty in terms of government waste and lack of results for Canadians? Politicians promise to cut waste. Yay, say voters. It turns out to be very difficult. One person's waste is another person's essential service. Many government cuts prove to be counterproductive. Reduce the budget for tax collection, and more people cheat. Reduce inspections of old age homes, and the elderly die in neglect. Cut back on public health, and a pandemic can quickly spread. Good government costs money. So where do government programs for the poor fit in? In terms of results, we have a huge problem. redesigning the system from top to bottom has to be an option. The GBI does it. In the process, this would address the immense waste of money in existing programs. The waste is found in the duplication of services at all levels of government. This waste is built into the Constitution. To cut waste, we have to change the Constitution. I've mentioned how politicians love to talk about getting results for Canadians. Let me get wonky for a moment. In truth, politicians seldom understand how a bureaucracy works, how results-based management is used to measure performance. When most politicians talk about results, they boast about spending, which are not results at all. They're called outputs or investments. Results-based management requires a plan that lays out the investments of money and people and sets out a series of measurable steps towards an ultimate outcome. It's how bureaucrats measure success. It's their version of a bottom line. Peace, order, and good government all require a competent bureaucracy. Since government's a necessity, good management is a priority. Yes, anyone who's spent time in a bureaucracy can cite endless examples of eye-rolling incompetence and stupidity. The same, by the way, is found in corporate bureaucracies. The Dilbert cartoon strip, TV shows like The Office, there's no lack of stuff to make fun of. Good managers, public or private sector, keep it to a minimum. The difference between public and private sector bureaucracies is that for the past four decades, our politics has been dominated by politicians, media, and academics who say governments, like in Ottawa, are the problem. The experts don't blame capitalism when businesses are run badly. Underperforming companies can get bought out or fail. With government, the pundits miss the point. We need government. Some programs will be well managed, others will not. Some policies will work, others will fail. Underperforming governments get voted out. If you talk to bureaucrats, you'll often hear that far too often it's ministers and their arrogant political staffers who gum up the works. They generally don't know how bureaucracies work, how RBM works. Making it worse, in Canada, the Prime Minister's Office and Privy Council have centralized power and ministerial accountability has basically left the building. When things fail, bureaucrats now take the blame. Even the most competent bureaucrats then become risk-averse. This guarantees even worse results, which further undermines trust, and we get even more pressure for less government. Imagine, alternatively, we had true government accountability and results-based management that worked. We would see better outcomes for all the money spent to help the poor, or the programs would shut down, and that's where we're at today. So, in the face of government failure to fix poverty over the past decades, perhaps we should try a different approach, like a guaranteed basic income. A GBI would reduce economic injustice. It would stimulate the local economy. Housing would be built to meet demand, not as a public welfare. GBI recipients could improve their lives. They could go to school, take part-time jobs, knowing they had a safety net. Of course, no GBI will be perfect, and yes, problems will arise. Some people will fall through the cracks. Some will do nothing with their lives. But a GBI can get the poor off the streets, get them fed and into programs where they can be helped. In short, a GBI makes moral sense, it makes financial sense, and most important, it makes common sense. You've been listening to Canada Reimagined. I'm Patrick Esmond White, and I am wholly responsible for what you've been listening to. My artwork was done by Tom Evans, the theme music by Tom Plant, and I'm also proud to be a member of the Harbinger Media collection of independent Canadian podcasters.